Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for the show that brings the magic right to your speakers. Ears up!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Ears Up Podcast. We are back. We're back, baby. We're here on the internet. We're live on the internet. Waiting to talk to you about a bunch of cool stuff, actually. We have two, not one, but two history shows, Taryn. What do you think of that?
Wow.
Yeah, no.
Incredible.
Who'd ever thought? This is our new, it's our new shtick.
Well, we are historians.
It's true. It's absolutely very true.
Oh, wait, no, we're not. Well, crap.
No. Well, we're somewhere in between.
We're somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, we would, I think, you know, we're the kind of historian like that weird Greek guy from the History Channel who talks about ancient aliens. That's the kind of historian we are.
Yeah.
We're like, we're a historian, but it just means, and it's like not, it's like of meaningless nonsense and fantasy.
True, except that we actually do like real research, so we do know some stuff. We just don't know it like offhand.
Right.
I can't pull it out of my back pocket.
No, that's absolutely correct.
I also love ancient aliens.
You know, I was listening to some podcasts and they were basically like the History Channel sort of primed the pump for all these sort of like boomer 40 through 60 year olds to get into conspiracy theories like QAnon and stuff like that. Because all you have to do is be like, this could have happened. I don't know. I'm just asking questions. And then, you know, through the 90s, you're watching so much History Channel. You're like, yeah, maybe the pyramids were built by aliens because we don't have any proof that they weren't. And then now suddenly it's like, there's a basement in a pizza place in D.C. that is like draining children of hormones and like feeding it to the top echelon. I don't know. It's a small joke for that.
The History Channel really went off track. You know, they had a good thing going. They were doing this show called Modern Marvels. I don't know if you remember that.
It was like Modern
Marvels, the Eiffel Tower. They even did one called Modern Marvels, Walt Disney World.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
And then they were running out of topics, and a friend of mine pointed out to me, they're like, did you see the latest Modern Marvels? It's Modern Marvels, Dirt. And it was an actual episode about dirt. And I thought, they've run the course with Modern Marvels, I think.
See, to be honest, that's
definitely peaked.
That's like where we're going to end up. It's going to be like Walt's left pinky finger on the partner statue. Next up on Ears Up.
The history of grass.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be the history of our third show. Yeah. Just repeat after that. This is how it was to plan this show. It was hard. Yeah. We'll finally hit our 15-minute show mark at that point. It's like, there you go. Well, I don't know what to say, guys. 5 minutes of intro, and then,
gotta go.
Yeah, the toilet paper that they use is not that great. I got scratchy on my bum. Well, we're done. That's it. Now, we do have a good show for you. We have Miss Beverly, who's going to go through the history of Turtle Talk with Crush.
Wow.
Which is sort of where we are.
Right. And I also just want to preface that
I
am very hesitant to call that a history show because there's really not a lot of history. It's a thing.
It is what it is, man. Yeah, we're just going to talk about it. And that, you know, some things you can't just have a history of if they're not really changing and haven't been around for, you know, decades or whatever.
It's been around for almost 20 years.
Oh, wow.
It just hasn't changed.
See, there you go.
It came out in 2005.
Wow.
Jeez, that's wild.
That doesn't feel like 20 years ago.
No.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't like associating 2005 with 20 years ago.
Yeah. Like, I apologize. Yeah.
That was really rude.
Yeah, it's a little 3 years away. And then we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and it's going to be the history of the Polynesian Village Resort music. Right, Jer?
That's
Spectra
right.
The Time segment.
Correct.
Get your Seggy on. Normally, Spectra Time, I think we'd go first, but... you know, I wanted to tease JR out a little bit.
Well, you know, you mix it up, keep it changing. It keeps it interesting for the listener.
That's true. That's true. I am excited about this. You did write and say that you may or may not have teared up writing this segment. You put it in the Discord. I don't know if you were drinking or not.
I was just going to say, don't have three dirty martinis before you write a Spectro Time segment.
Oh, or two. Because
then I got so moved by this story. And then I was like, I was looking back at my write-up tonight, and I'm like, why was I crying over
this? You guys, they brought grass from Hawaii to make the grass skirts. And I think it's beautiful. I think it's so beautiful.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's going to be a good time. But before we get to all that, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, maybe feedback. Taryn at earsup-podcast.com. Look, if you have feedback on the show, whatever it is, if you want to talk and say hi and whatever, Taryn at earsup-podcast.com, or we have a little form on our website. You can do that too. Any show suggestions? Terrence, I guess, at earsup-podcast.com. I don't know.
You can send those to me too.
Honestly, you can kind of just do anything to anybody. If you forget someone's email, just send anything to any of us. But, you know, then I don't have anything to say in the beginning of the show. So you can say hi.
Hi.
To Bev. And anything else comes to me.
That was so terrible.
Hi. I'm your new babysitter. Hi.
I'm sorry, hi. But I'm also not sorry.
We're going to read Reader's Digest all day and eat hard candy.
It is interesting, though. You've been able to keep that word different and interesting for, 200 shows?
A really long time.
You still surprise us with a new high.
Honestly, I surprised myself that last time. That was weird.
It was good. Anything else comes to me, Jason, earsup-podcast.com. Look, if you guys are trying to go to the parks right now, concierge.com is really the only way. I know that Disney have a podcast about how to do it on your own, but number one, you don't want to listen to it. Number two, you don't want to do it all on your own. Trust me.
Why would you?
Exactly. You wouldn't want to at all. So go to concierge.com, buy your tickets to Concierge. There's no markup. You're paying the same exact price as every other schlub going on the Disneyland or Disney World websites, but you get the added benefit of having the team at Concierge help you plan your vacay, help you get reservations. You got to get those resis. You know, you don't want to wake up at 3 a.m. to get a resi. Make Jimmy over there at Concierge or any of the other Concierge people that they got going on, make them wake up and do it. That's what they're there for. You get some rest. You're going to need it.
Very good.
Yeah. So check that out. We also have Discord is still up and running. We're still doing that. I think it's caught on. I think people are enjoying themselves.
It's
like the Disky.
I've been not active. I kind of feel bad because I get the notifications and I see everybody's talking and I'm like, oh, I should jump in. But then I downloaded TikTok, so I do that instead.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. We're not on TikTok.
No, it's a horrible place.
You got to support your community. And TikTok is a terrible place. Like
it's
terrible. Yeah, it will burn your brain.
It really does. It's the biggest time suck. I don't go to Reddit anymore, which was like the smarter place to go. Like
sure, yes. If you can hook up your own router from Best Buy at your house, then yes, you were on Reddit. But if you couldn't do that, then yeah.
No.
Leave me alone. I'm over here on Reddit.
Yeah, I felt better about saying like, oh yeah, you know, I read Reddit before bed. Now I look at TikTok before bed.
Yeah, well,
I mean, my brain dies every night.
The people who think you're smarter for being on Reddit are the same people who don't know that there's like literally subreddits about eating boogers. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, it's literally just there's anything going on over there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
I'm sure
there's a lot of depravity going on Reddit, but if there's not a subreddit about eating boogers, there should be, honestly. I mean, at this point, it's the last bastion of content that we have.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Never mind.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to know what the difference was between Reddit and Quora?
Quora is like where you just ask random questions and then random people.
I thought that's what Reddit was.
It sort of is, but Reddit's just more like a community. It's more like a forum, I guess, but instead of like forum sections on a forum, it's just a page and you can kind of scroll through and stuff like that. It's like
it's more communal. There's I follow like a baking Reddit subreddit. So like I see other people's baking and their recipes and things like that. And then there's my favorite one is very popular. It's Am I the A-hole? And it's these people write in stories, and then their last question is, was I the A-hole in this situation that they describe? Those are my favorite, because it's basically Dear Amy, but they're asking the world. And when they actually are the a-hole, oh, it's just so good to read all the comments.
Okay.
Well, yep, good that's enough. Taryn over there learning. Learning on Reddit. But yeah, anyway, concierge. go check them out. You can support the show if you guys want. You go to Etsy.com/shop/Coveyors. Grab a couple of our brand new tie-dye t-shirts. Those are doing pretty well. I enjoy those. I enjoy seeing those fly off the shelves. We have all sorts of other shirts you can check out, too. I guess I got to look and see, because Etsy will sometimes just, like, pull stuff down. Because you only put stuff up for, like, 3 months or whatever the default is. So I got to make sure. And they don't tell you that, hey, this is coming off now. So I got to go and make sure, you know, all our stuff's back up. So, yeah, I don't know, man. Anyway, but the best way to support the show is patreon.com/earsup. You can sign up for as little as $2 a month if you want to. And that just lets you, you know, help support the show, the shows. I mean, because we also, you know, off of this pipeline, we have Supreme Resort and Bantha Milk and Scraping the Vault. So, and then, you know, obviously the Secret Show. So, you know, that helps everything keep going there. But if you want to go at the $5 level or up, you get a whole bunch of other stuff like Secret Show access and walkabout access, which we are going to be doing a walkabout tomorrow night. Maddie is going to join us. She's out there in TikTok land. Speaking of TikToks, collecting Disney themed TikToks.
Oh, boy.
Just about, you know, the weird stuff that people like to post on TikTok about Disneyland, Disney World, and
I'll
wherever.
Join.
Yeah. So we're going to sit and, you know. Either find out some cool trends, because Maddie is the trendy. She's on trend. She's like, what kind of stuff do you want? I'm like, first of all, I don't know. I leave it up to you, because TikTok is weird. Yeah, but I'm like, I want like fun stuff, but also stuff we can talk about. Like, it's not just, here was my trip. Nah, that's boring. But like, here are these cool new, you know, Crocs, or I threw my Croc at Gaston, or something like that. That's what I want to see. Not that I'm advocating throwing Crocs at Baston. Nobody hits like Baston. I don't know. I know that's not his name, guys.
The 21st Amendment Brewery's latest beer release, Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA, puts an island vacation in their whimsically designed cans. That's right, cans. This refreshing year-round Tropical IPA is brewed with pale and Munich malts, brimming with Azaka, Citra Cryo, and Mosaic hops, and topped with a splash of pineapple flavor. The result is a clean, refreshing beer featuring a mix of sweet malt, balanced bitterness, fruit-forward hops, and a nice tropical vacation at the finish. Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA is available at your local good beer shop, neighborhood taproom, and anywhere else people come together to find great craft beer.
Punch it! All right. It's going to get old one day, but God, I hope not.
That day is not soon.
That day is definitely not soon, man. That day is definitely not soon. All right, Beverly, Miss Beverly.
Okay.
Let's get on with some history of Turtle Talk with Crush. Let's crush it.
Okay, let's crush it. Never say that again.
Unless you're talking about sudsy bevies, I don't want to hear it.
Well, today we're going to chat a little bit about Turtle Talk with Crush. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I sort of hesitate to call this segment a history segment, quote unquote, because there's actually very little information available about the history and development of this attraction. But there's plenty of information about the attraction itself, so we'll start there. Turtle Talk with Crush opened originally in Walt Disney World on November 16th, 2004, and then was duplicated at Disneyland in July of 2005. Now, some of you may disagree with me, but in my opinion, Turtle Talk with Crush is an attraction geared towards what I like to refer to as the Disney Junior demographic.
Okay.
Let me be clear by saying that I'm not saying the attraction isn't cool. I'm simply stating that I am not the main demographic it's geared to.
True.
Totally true. Turtle Talk with Crush is located in Hollywoodland inside the Animation Academy, which is right across the street from Award Wieners.
Classic.
Yes, it is.
Classic
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Once you enter the Animation Academy, you go to the right where you'll find the waiting queue for the attraction. But I'm pretty sure you can actually just wander around the Animation Academy and they just announce when the next showing is. Because I think it runs like every 15 or every 20 minutes or so.
That makes sense.
The room the attraction is housed in is very similar to a small theater. There are bench seats in the back for the adults and a sloped floor in the front for the kids. PSA. If you're an adult, don't sit on the floor in front of a small child.
I like turtle talk. I'm going to sit right here, bro.
In that scenario, you are the a-hole.
Check.
Yeah, that rule actually extends beyond turtle talk with crush, as it turns out.
Yes. It really does. At the front of the room, there is a large screen that gives the illusion of looking into the ocean or a giant aquarium. This is called the Window to the Pacific.
Oh, all right.
I don't know why I just said it like that. But the Window to the Pacific. Once seated, guests are given a brief introduction to the show by a cast member, and then they are greeted by Crush. And sometimes during this portion, you'll get to see some other familiar characters from the Finding Nemo franchise. After some initial chit-chat and silly jokes about living in the ocean, the real magical part of the show begins. This is the question and answer portion. This is where Crush will answer pretty much any questions presented to him by the crowd. Sometimes they're about things related to the ocean. Sometimes you get a three-year-old asking about planets. You never know what Crush is going to be asked, but he pretty much always has an answer for you. And I'd like to play my audio clip right here.
I bet you would.
Don't mind.
What are all your kids' names?
All 65. Right now. Okay, hope you got a minute, Kaylee. Well, check it out. There's Squirty, he's totally my youngest. Then we've got Sheldon, Shelby, Trisha, Lisha, Michelle, his shell, her shell, our shell, one shell, two shell, red shell, a blue shell, Shell-a-la ding dong. Then we got the twins, Bill and Ted, Wayne and Garth, Cheech and Chong. The triplets, Mary, Kate, and Ashley. The teenagers, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Donatello, Raphael, John, Paul, George, and Rego. Yeah, John's going through a weird phase right now. Thinks he's a walrus. And then we totally got Michael, Janet, Jermaine, Tito, Latoya, and Randy, Ross, Rachel, Phoebe, Monica, Joey, and Chandler. Yeah, they're like really good friends, bro. Crush Jr., Stan, Crush Jr., all the way up until my oldest son, Keanu. Well, hey, some of you laugh, but he's 100 years old and still lives at home.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
He legit answered the question.
So, obviously, that audio clip was pulled from YouTube, and if you've never had the chance to sit in Turtle Talk with Crush, I think you, like, take the opportunity and watch one of the YouTube videos, because it's actually really entertaining, and it's also really fascinating, because as he's saying all of those names, all of his mannerisms and the way his mouth is moving is in real time. So it seems as though he's really speaking to you.
Well, he is.
Most of the show.
What do you mean? Well, it seems, yes, like it.
But he is.
You
know
real.
What I mean?
He's real.
I mean, like, it's not like overdubbed. Like, his mouth isn't like wah, 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 wah. It's right. Like, it's speaking.
Right.
Now, most of the show is improvised, with Crush answering questions on the fly. However, like we heard in the previous clip, there are some canned answers. For example, the kids' names. Also, sometimes Crush will ask the crowd what their favorite food is. And often someone will be cheeky and respond with turtle soup.
Oh, to which, rude.
Right. Well, to which Crutch immediately will respond by calling security. Which is actually the only appropriate response.
That's funny. I mean, I feel like, I wonder in the writer's room, if there's a writer's room for it, but there has to be, like, here are the appropriate answers to the questions that are either asked a lot over time, sort of develop. That's got to be the, I mean, what are you going to say? How are you going to say that?
Of course.
You can't be violent to
that person.
Yeah,
I would say it's like 90% improvised and maybe 10% scripted, if you will. So when you see the image of Crush floating around in the window to the Pacific, it's actually something called a computer graphic avatar that's being controlled by a puppet. And the puppet's being operated by a puppeteer whose performance is then digitized in real time.
Yeah, all right.
So Crush's movements and voice-activated lip sync are rendered on the spot and are projected at 60 frames per second. And this is how his mouth moves in synchronization with the actor's words.
Wow.
Right. Okay, so this is going to sound dumb, but I have to share.
Okay.
So when I read that Crush is being controlled by a puppeteer, my brain immediately just imagines this guy in a back room, like holding a puppet, like a turtle puppet in his arms and doing all the movements in front of a bunch of cameras. But also like the puppet's wearing a green screen outfit so that they can project it.
Oh my God.
It's a whole, it was a weird thing.
Your brain's a mess.
It was, but it turns out,
yeah,
I'm not entirely wrong.
Okay.
Wow. So what I was able to find is that something called digital puppetry techniques are what allow the puppeteer's movements to control the body motions. So
Okay. Basically,
hold on. This is a quote from a digital puppetry blog.
Okay.
That's right.
I love
digital puppetry blog.
I love that. This is why the internet sort of kind of rules. There's a digital puppetry blog.
Yeah.
And I bet they have a subreddit.
Well, it basically also says almost exactly the same thing on Wikipedia. So I kind of had like, I kind of looked at a couple different places to make sure I wasn't spreading falsities.
Sure.
But the exact definition of what is and is not digital puppetry is subject to debate among puppeteers as well as computer graphic designers. But generally, it's agreed that digital puppetry differs from conventional computer animation in that it involves performing characters in real time rather than animating them frame by frame.
Sure.
After I read that a couple times.
Okay.
Like, because it took a couple times.
Yeah.
After I read that, I Google image searched digital puppetry. And I'm actually, like I said, I'm actually not that far off. From what it looks like to me, the puppeteer has his hands in this apparatus type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And based upon his wrist movements, that determines how the puppet moves. So he's not actually holding a puppet, but he is making the puppetry moves. Now, Jason actually helped me with this, but we tried really hard to find a Turtle Talk with Crush behind the scenes video.
Yeah.
But of the 6 links that I found, all of them had been removed for copyright infringements. So for now, we just have to use our imaginations. Unless somebody in the chat knows, if you know how this works, feel free to share, because we don't. Now, throughout the show, the puppeteer is not able to see the audience through the screen. Like, I always thought the screen sort of acted as a two-way mirror, mm-hmm. but that's not the case. It's like a giant TV. Okay. There are instead several hidden cameras throughout the theater that allow the puppeteer to see the guests and call on them during the question and answer time. And this is always fun because obviously the puppeteer doesn't know the names of the children and adults in the theater. So he'll usually call them out by something they're wearing. Like, for example, something like, hey, little dudette in the bodacious pink sweatshirt or something like that. You know, this, and this also lets the cast member who's working in the theater know who he needs to give the microphone to. Regarding Crush's voice, I actually found some conflicting information.
Mm-hmm.
Some articles I read said that the puppeteers are actually hired based on their ability to mimic Crush's voice.
Nice. <Okay. laughs>
And other sources just said that voice synthesizers are used. I couldn't
sound
determine
like
either way.
I don't think that you can. I mean, I don't think voice synthesizer technology is there.
Yeah, you
so you think it is actually just?
I think it's someone doing the voice. Yeah, I mean, this is a voice actor,
the California skater or not surfer voice. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Spicoli.
It's not super hard. I mean,
Bill
I'm not
going to
do it, but
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, bro. Not for nothing, that's how you all sound to me. So you could, anyone could do it, I swear.
Awesome, I love that.
I mean,
love
it
that
is,
for us.
It is a pretty stereotypical thing, and, you know, any half-assed voice actor can do that. So, I mean, voice synthesizer, I don't think you can get the right inflection. You can get the right tone. I mean, there's, like, voice equipment to, like, compress and expand and sort of like pitch shift, but you still need the intonation. And I think you could tell. I think it's a voice actor because looking through some of the clips on YouTube, the voices are different.
They are a bit different.
So if you were going to be, and even the delivery, like when Crush is going through all the 65 kids, sometimes they're different. They're pauses. So they're like live. I mean, they're scripted answers, obviously, because the answers were the same. But the delivery was different, and even the tone and how the person intonates things.
Some of the inflections.
It's different. Yeah, right. So I think it's just a voice actor, you know, either a puppeteer trained to do that voice or vice versa.
The chat is disagreeing with you.
Of course they are. I'm going to fire them all.
They are
start
saying
booting them out.
One who knows some Crushes says that they are synthesized.
No.
And Mr. P says, think deep fake, but audio. So it's they're saying it's
the
a
buzzer
thing.
Says no.
It's, yeah. my laundry's done.
Yeah, cool. That's me folding laundry here during the Spectro Time segment.
So Aaron in the chat says it's a mix of both technologies.
Okay.
Well, one's not a technology. One's just a voice.
Just a skill, and then use your skill over the...
Well, and Aaron would know. And Mr. P, I think, is, you know, full of it. But Aaron I trust. So Aaron would definitely know for sure. But I just... I have a hard time believing it. So I'm still not going to believe it, even though Aaron's telling me.
It does. It's hard to believe because the last version of Disney voice synthesizing that we've heard is the Main Street Electrical Parade's intro. So I haven't heard them advance it beyond that with any proof. So,
true.
Yeah. I mean,
because it would also, this is a real time thing. So it has to be like the mic or like audio is synthesized in real time. It's not editing later. It's
no, the computer and the processor that does this has to be very, very fast.
Could you imagine if like that went down in the middle of it and then like Crush just starts talking like
his normal voice?
It's actually just a British man.
Yeah,
exactly.
Crush Junior.
Oh man.
Well, I don't know. Now Sarah's telling me I should go to the press room. No, I'm not going to do it. Because I want Aaron. Aaron, you need to give me photos. Proof. Give me proof.
Photos of the synthesizer.
Yeah.
Give us photos of that audio now.
Yeah. Just the waveform. Here it is. Yeah. All right, go ahead, Beth.
It's okay. Turtle Talk with Crush remained largely unchanged for more than 16 years. Can you believe... we already talked about this, but can you... believe that Finding Nemo has been out for almost 20 years, that the movie was released in 2003.
First of all, no.
I dislike you right now. And yeah. I don't
I'm
like
sorry.
It when I dislike
it's
you,
accurate. But...
That's in wild 2000... to me, man.
It's unfortunate. Like, where did the time go?
Yeah. Ugh.
In 2016, it was given a slight update, but only to add the characters from Finding Dory.
Oh, good.
That's like the only update that I was able to find. It's just pretty much been the status. I mean, I'm sure they've done like maintenance on it, but that's pretty much just the only change that's happened in the last almost 20 years. A version of Turtle Talk with Crush unit was donated to the new CHOC Bill Holmes Hospital by Walt Disney Imagineering in 2013 to entertain the child patients and their siblings. This was the first attraction created by Imagineering to be placed in a non-Disney environment.
Oh, that's nice.
That is nice. That made me happy. And that was actually how I wanted to end it, because that is the quote-unquote history of Finding Nemo.
No.
Turtle Talk with Crush.
Whatever it is. Whatever this dumb show was.
You know, and I do second it. Like, if you've skipped it because you're like too cool like me or too adult... like Taryn to go. Like, we forced ourselves to go one time. It is a really cool show.
It's because Abby was with us. We were with Abby. That's
oh, really?
We went.
That's
we
didn't right.
Just go.
That's right. Oh, you guys did.
Right. Well, whatever.
When she was real little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Attach yourself to a small child and go into the show. It is a cool show. And I remember, like, wow, I'm just, like, sort of haven't really been blown away by a Disney attraction like that in a long time. I mean, maybe like the Millennium Falcon in Smuggler's Run or something like that. Mm. But like, you know, everything else you've sort of seen, or you've seen a tiny bit of it in other rides, or you're like, oh, okay, I know how this works, or, you know, whatever. But it's sort of, nothing has really blown me away like that. I remember it was a very impactful moment. It was like, wow, this is incredibly cool.
It feels like real magic.
Yeah, it does.
Because even as an adult, you're like, but wait, how?
Yeah.
How is an animated character talking to me?
Well, we still don't know, apparently. The jury's out.
And
I don't
actually,
know.
You know what, the other thing that's kind of similar to that is the cars in Cars Land. How they like can talk when they drive down the road, but then they can actually talk to you and say something personal to to people. I find that really weird too.
I was thinking more of the Monsters, Inc. ride at the end.
Moz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's just obsessed
with
Jason. She loves
Jason, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. You know, it's all right. We're pushing weight. It's okay. Sorry, everybody. But yeah, even like that, to me, like that sort of technology is like, wow, that's still really fun to see in a ride where it's like, oh, there's like actual interaction with the guests. But this is just on a whole other level.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Mr. P said he's going to synthesize my voice by feeding podcast episodes to machine learning software and make me tell myself I'm wrong. And I would love to see it, to be honest.
Mr. P does not have that capability.
He might. I don't know. I don't know what he does. I think he programs like satellites or space shuttles or something, or both. I don't really know. Anyway, good job, Bev.
Thanks.
I mean, it's a tough one because there's not a whole lot going on, but it's still very fun. And, you know, and I wish there was like more information out there. Because like you said, I helped you try to like figure this out. I have no idea. No idea.
I wish there was more information on the back end. Not so much behind the scenes, but like the development of the attraction. And there was nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who came up with this idea. I don't know why they came up with this idea. I don't, you know, it was, and it wasn't for lack of trying.
For sure. Absolutely. Aaron,
well, you've changed my mind on it because I've always bristled at the idea of Turtle Talk with Crush. I don't like that it's in my wonderful Living Seas Pavilion at Epcot, which is one of my favorites, but you have made me want to go in and try it.
You've never
run
done
past it.
Oh, you've never. There. Oh, Jer, you got to
go.
No,
you'll love it. Oh, my gosh. I was actually, I had convinced myself when I was planning this, I was like, oh, well, at least everybody's been on the ride, like, or on the been to the attraction. Like, Jeremy 100% has gone to this because this is so something you would enjoy.
Well,
yeah,
there you go.
So, Jeremy, when next time you go back to Disney Springs, whenever you go to Planet Hollywood to find the Titanic door that's in Planet Hollywood,
what?
Yeah, the door from the movie Titanic is on display at the Planet Hollywood in Disney Springs.
What door?
What?
The door that Rose boots Jack off of.
Whoa.
What is that? The door that they both could have fit on?
Yeah.
I always thought that was a headboard.
Well, maybe it is. I don't know.
Wow.
Who knows? But how did you find that out? Is that new that it's there? Has it been there all along?
I don't know. There was an article about it because someone did a TikTok video of it, and it sort of started going viral, as these things do, because people are like, wow, I knew that Jack could have fit on there. Or some people go like, yeah, actually, now that you look at it, it is pretty small. I apologize for like 20 years of hating on Rose. There's no way two people could have fit on there. And then sort of
it was like cracked, if I remember correctly. It's kind of like at an angle, so like I think.
Well, yeah, because she's like half in the water.
Well, no, I didn't mean that. I meant like the top is like cut, like cracked at an angle. I thought.
Oh yeah, I don't know, but you know these Disney news blog sites, all they do is they just mine TikTok and Reddit for for posts,
for
and they go
headline.
Here we go. Someone dropped a drink in Disneyland, and no one gave them a fresh one. That's a 4-paragraph article. all right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. We're going to listen to Jeremy explain the history of the music of the Polynesian Village Resort. He's going to whisk us away to palm trees and music. I don't know, something like that. Spectro time. Hang on, everybody. It's ears up. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And now, back to the show that ignites your dream wish of imaginations and magical color wonderment of forever. Ears up.
Welcome back, everybody. Sorry about that break, but, you know, you got to take a break every now and then. You know what I'm trying to say? During the break, we were listening to If You Want My Body from Submariner and Axe Murderer, because it's just very good. And I'm not going to do the accent, even though I really want to.
Save it for the secret show.
Yeah, do it then.
Actually, you know, we're talking about Turtle Talk with Crush, and Crush's big thing in movies, cha. Cha, bruh. And I'll say that on the secret show because we have a buddy who grew up in L.A. when that word was sort of like coming around. And he's like, this is how that word came up. This is what that word means. And I think it's funny that's in a Disney movie. All right, Jeremy.
Join us as we unravel the magic behind some of Disney's most beloved pieces of music. It's Spectro Time.
This magic night, a million stars will play beside us, cast a spell of light, glimmering, shimmering, carouseling round.
Welcome back, sir. It's been a hot minute.
It's nice to hear that intro again.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah, what was the last one? Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I could look it up in my archives.
Yeah, that's all right.
But we'll save that for another time, the history of Spectro Time segments.
Yes.
Which is basically just Jeremy going, wait, when was that? And then just typing. Oh, okay, it was this date. The end.
Right. Well, for this Spectro Time segment, I'm going to take you on a tour of the music of Disney's Polynesian Village Hotel. Which, have you ever stayed there?
Never stayed there, but desperately want to. Because it's like olive green and dark brown wood, and I just it's my dream.
We should have.
It's beautiful.
We really should have. Thinking about that, but no, Taryn wanted to stay in the Grand Floridian.
I did.
Whatever, and so we did it.
But we should have stayed at the Poly.
I know. We should have. I think everyone was like, can we just move rooms? Can we just move our resis over, please?
Well, those are both very lovely experiences, I assume. I haven't stayed at either of those hotels, so you're one up on me. But the nice thing about the Disney hotels in Florida and the ones around the Magic Kingdom is they're very accessible. So even though you may not have ever stayed there, there's a Trader Sam's, there's Ohana, there's the Tambu Lounge. You can go and get a pretty good feel for that place and spend a lot of time there if you want to. So you don't have to be spending the night to enjoy those hotels.
Yeah, we went to Trader Sam's. And what I didn't realize is when we went is that you had to wait in line. You had, like, you can't just go in and get a seat even though it's empty. Like, they seat you. And so we went, and we just walked right in because I assumed it was just like our Trader Sam's. And it was not. Like, the waiter's like, oh, you just were here. Oh, okay, I guess. There's no one there. And there was a little bit of a vibe.
There's a little bit of a pushback vibe.
And then I think you told me, Taryn. I think you're like, yeah, we weren't supposed to do that. There was a sign that says, please wait to be seated.
No, it was people had stamps on their hands. Everybody had stamps except for us.
Oh.
And so they had gotten there and there was a place. It was just weird. I actually still don't exactly know what had happened, but I felt like we did something wrong, but I was on my honeymoon and I didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
So,
but it was a cool spot.
We were already in there.
It was neat. I mean,
what are you going to do?
I just can't believe you found a time at Trader Sam's when there weren't people there.
Yeah, there was not a whole lot. As far as I remember, I may have had blinders on because, sometimes when you go to a restaurant and you see the open table and you're like, that's all I see. I don't care who's here. I just my focused right here on getting to this spot. It could have been that. There could have been 1,000 people waiting. I have no idea. We just walked right in like we owned the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably jumped the line.
Yeah, totally I think we did.
But
yeah.
I didn't see the line, so that's what was confusing.
Yeah, Aaron was with us, too. And so he's telling us, we kind of cut the line.
Yeah, he says we cut the line.
Oops. Jerk. Whatever.
Didn't know.
Well, when Disney was building Walt Disney World, the Seven Seas Lagoon was constructed in front of the Magic Kingdom and was meant to represent the seven major seas of the world and was intended to host resorts themed to iconic places such as Asia, Venice, Persia, and, of course, the Polynesian. The first three never materialized. But the Polynesian opened with the Vacation Kingdom of the World in 1971, though it wasn't fully completed until the following year in 1972. A 1971 publicity release stated, quote, "The Polynesian Village Hotel offers our guests excellent accommodations in a peaceful village atmosphere. Nestled in luxuriant landscaping on the southern shores of the Seven Seas Lagoon, its motto is Aita Peitea." Oh, also, so just a warning, there's a lot of Polynesian words that I have to try to pronounce tonight.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Song titles, and I'm not good at any of them, so just brace yourselves.
Well, during the secret show, which we're also recording tonight, which Jeremy is also going to be on tonight, you'll go through this segment again for us.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
The motto is Aita Peitea, which means there will be another day tomorrow like today. It's a very efficient language.
Yeah. That could be very. That
it's sort of depressing.
Also sort of like I don't want that.
Oh, good. There's going to be another day tomorrow, but it'll be just like today.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie starring Bill Murray.
Yeah. Well, when you're at the Polynesian, you want that to happen.
True.
Yeah. It continued, quote, Maui, the god of vacations, slows the sun down to make the days longer so that our guests may enjoy the slower paced, more casual atmosphere of this delightful South Seas resort.
I didn't know Maui was the god of vacations, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome. For the extra hour in the day.
The resort was meant to pay tribute to American interpretations of Polynesian culture, as well as being an extension of Adventureland. And I just scrolled too fast and I can't find my place. And the resort was planned as the Enchanted Tiki Room attraction at Disneyland was enjoying huge popularity, and tiki culture in general was increasingly popular across America. Now, many don't realize this, but the Polynesian resort was built in a modular way by U.S. Steel in much the same way that the contemporary resort is famous for having been constructed. The individual rooms were built and furnished nearby and then placed onto the structure. The only difference between being that the rooms of the 15-story contemporary resort were famously slid into place like the drawers of a bureau, whereas the rooms of the shorter 3-story Polynesian were just stacked.
That's cool.
Interesting tidbit. Modern technology and building down there for the vacation kingdom. Things aren't that modern down there anymore. It's all just blasé. The hotel features several buildings meant to represent different islands of the Polynesian named for Samoa, Hawaii, Fiji, Tahiti, Tonga, and others. Of course, part of the authenticity at Disney is music appropriate for the area, or in this case, the hotel. The first area music loop was compiled by the famous guy Jack Wagner, the voice of Disneyland and Walt Disney World, and likely began playing in 1972 when construction was finally finished. This initial loop played until 1995. Now, documentation on this loop is scarce at best, and the only way we know what music was playing is through the determined research of Disney music audiophiles listening to home videos and hearing the music in the background, and some people who just went to the Polynesian in those days and turned tape recorders on because they liked the music they were hearing. And so now through that, we've been able to source some of the tracks of that loop.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Shout out to all the brave soldiers out there.
Brave soldiers.
Thank you for your service.
So through these efforts, we are able to identify at least 6 tracks that played at the Polynesian from 1972 to 1995. We start off with a track called Hawaiian Memories by the Living Strings from their album Hawaiian Memories, number 1.
That's lovely.
Do you feel transported?
I do, honestly.
So that group, the Living Strings, they weren't really a group at all. Rather, they were a studio orchestra made up of instrumentalists from various orchestras just put together to create a series of easy listening albums of various genres, one of which was Hawaiian Memories. But basically, this is just a group of people that got together to make elevator music. So,
yeah.
Is it like elevator music-y, or is it, I mean...
I think in total, that might not be.
Okay.
But in total, that's kind of what they were making. Next up is Blue Hawaii from the 1965 vinyl album release Solid Gold Guitar Goes Hawaiian by Al Kaiola, number 2.
Makes me want to be on a beach.
Why do you say it in a threatening tone?
It's not threatening. It's like relaxed. Like,
okay.
Makes me want to be on a beach.
I want to be on a beach somewhere.
So that was Al Kaola. Kaola was an American guitarist, composer, and arranger who spanned a variety of music genres, including jazz, country, rock, and pop. And he was born right here where I am right now in Jersey City, New Jersey. So he's one of our famous sons of Jersey.
There you
we
go.
We call them.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Next up is a song Jack Wagner used not only here at the Polynesian, but over at the Adventureland Veranda in the newly opened Magic Kingdom. In fact, for the Adventureland Veranda, Wagner had dubbed in a series of chimes to play over the original recording. Now, in real life recordings from the Polynesian, it's possible to hear those same chimes. So Wagner used the same edited recording for both the Adventureland Veranda, and then he just said, let's use that same thing over at Polynesian. I have not that version. I have the original studio recording. I don't have his chimes. But here is Stars Over Maui by the 101 Strings Orchestra off their album In a Hawaiian Paradise, number 3.
If you want to be on a beach, man. Sounds great.
I love that track. That's on Spectro.
Oh, nice.
Because it's on there because I have the Adventureland Veranda music. But don't you worry, all this music is going up soon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, benefit of a Spectro segment.
It's true.
Tune from Rangoon by Martin Denny on his album Quiet Village is our next track. Denny described his music as, quote, window dressing or a background, which is perfect if you're trying to construct a hotel background music loop. He built a collection of strange and exotic instruments with the help of several friends who worked in the airline industry at the time. His friends would travel the world and bring Denny back these instruments they found on their travels, and he would build musical arrangements around them. His music was a combination of ethnic styles, including South Pacific, those from the Orient, and Latin rhythms. Take a listen to Tune from Rangoon, number 4.
Classic. That's a classic, yeah. In the tiki world, man, for sure.
It definitely plays at our house during the summer.
Yeah, it's so good.
You're familiar with that one.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to, like, pick it out, you know, the title, but I think Martin Denny had a sound. He had a very definable, you know, different from, like, Artie Lyman, where it's sort of, like, the same exotica sort of thing. But it's interesting how these Polynesian interpretive musics and the tiki sort of musics I'm involved into, like, the exotica realm too, you know, where, like, a little more sultry and it was sort of a little more sexy and, you know, kind of less exotic and more that drippy, dreamy sort of music, you know, like burlesque show kind of, you know, Betty Page stuff.
Yeah, well, some of the artists we're discussing tonight are really credited for having created that genre.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and Denny is one of the most, he's just a name that even before doing this segment, I knew that name because he's definitely one of the more famous in this realm.
Yeah.
The last track that we know of is called Pretty Maui Girl by the group Diamond Head Beachcombers off their album Music Inspired by the Motion Picture Diamond Head. Unfortunately, that is only released on vinyl. And it hasn't arrived at my house yet.
Oh.
So I don't have that audio clip for you. I will bring that to, maybe I'll bring it to a secret show or something sometime soon.
But I mean, the one that you're going to be on right after the show?
Yeah, I haven't gotten that.
I told you we were going to bully you.
I haven't gotten a UPS notification during this chat. So.
All right. Okay.
So we are going to move on from the original music set. And in 1995, the Polynesian introduced an updated, longer music loop. This loop featured 18 tracks. Fully 6 of those tracks were from one album called Chants et Danses de Tahiti. Of course, That album title being in French makes sense given that many islands in Polynesia are considered French territories. Here's a sample of the songs from that album, number 5.
This one a lot. That was like my favorite one.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's the kind of music I like. I don't like the exotica kind of stuff. I find that really boring and not really interesting to listen to, but I like that stuff. The drum, the, you know, the interesting percussion instruments, all that. I like it.
Yeah,
you don't agree, but that's
okay. I like them both, man. I mean, it just depends on what vibe you're going for.
Well, I don't have as much room in my heart for so many types of music.
If it's not drum line, like drum core or whatever, or, you know, the theme from Titanic, it doesn't evolve.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I've got.
Yeah.
Another album heavily featured was Roland Casimero's Waikiki's Greatest Hits. Here's Lovely Hula Hands and Hawaiian War Chant from that album, number 6.
See, this I don't like.
What is that instrument?
It's a guitar.
I know that. That part.
Do you recognize that second song?
No. I mean, you said that it's Hawaiian war chant, but I don't, I'm not familiar enough with that, with the song, I guess, to like know that. I know what it's from.
Take a listen to number 7. Well, we'll hear that again. And then I've juxtaposed that with a more familiar version.
I like it.
So you could, when you hear it, he plays with the melody a little bit, but that's the song.
Mm-hmm.
He just really reinterprets it.
Yeah.
Roland Casimero was one half of a group called the Brothers Casimero, and they helped define contemporary Hawaiian music. In 2010, the Polynesian once again received a fresh set of audio. This loop is notable for drawing from a wide variety of Polynesian artists and clocks in at just under 4 hours in length. So to hear the whole thing, you'd have to sit around the Polynesian for a while, but for many people, that's not a problem. This loop samples several numbers by a group called the Sunday Manoa. Sunday Manoa was founded by Hawaiian-born guitarist Peter Moon and two members of the Pahanui Brothers. Sure. After other members of the group left, Moon recruited our friends from earlier, the brothers Casimero, Roland and Robert. In 1971, they released their first album titled Guava Jam. Guava Jam became seen as the spark of the Hawaiian cultural renaissance. And two tracks from Guava Jam made their way to the Polynesian area music in 2010. One is Ka ililiawo koe kekoa.
Nice.
Good job.
I don't know if it's a good job. But that could be completely not how it's really said. But
as far as we know, it sounds great.
And the other is the much easier to pronounce self-title, Guava Jam, number 8.
By the way, Bev Mike in the chat says that's the slack key guitar.
Okay.
Very Hawaiian.
I've never heard of that.
Slack key, yeah.
Nice, huh?
Yeah, I like it.
The Kahawanu Lake Trio gives us 5 tracks for the loop. Kahawanu Lake was the leader of the trio named after himself. He started playing in the 1950s with a swing jazz style of Hawaiian music. He was a ukulele master, and following releasing 6 albums, he was one of the founders of the Hawaiian Music Hall of Fame. Let's take a listen to some of his music at the Polynesian number 9.
I really like those ones.
The Halley girl. I mean, I feel like that's not a good, I don't know. Isn't that like a, not a nice term for non-native?
Isn't that like a bad name for white people?
Yeah, which is funny because it's like, here's a song about falling in love with one who's doing the hula, which I feel like nowadays, I don't know. But it's, I like hearing songs like this, especially in other languages that we're not really used to, because it sort of reminds you how much more rich like the human language can be. You know what I mean? Because on first blush, like, it kind of just sounds made. I don't really understand the sound that they're saying. But if you listen and it's you actively try to like pick out, you know, vowel sounds and the actual, like, maybe this is the word, maybe this is the word, because I don't know, because the Hawaiian language has a lot of like accent marks and it's tough to pronounce. So
yeah,
I don't know. It sort of like reminds you that we're a lot bigger than just English, which I know sounds stupid. It's like the most basic take ever, but I don't know. It's refreshing. It's nice. I like it.
This just in from Petros, there's more languages than just English.
But you know what I mean? We're not exposed to it. And if we are,
right,
we don't know if we're saying it the right way or not.
I have a weird thing. Like you heard what he was saying and you know what he said. Like you picked up on it. I don't hear lyrics almost ever. I have to hear a song hundreds of times before I start to pick up on the words. To me, the vocals in a song, even if it's in English, it's just another instrument of the band to me, or the orchestra.
Interesting.
I am totally
I don't
with
hear
you.
Words.
I, okay. don't, I don't either.
Sam says the same thing.
He does?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He never knows the lyrics to any songs. It's not like his primary focus. Like if he's listening to the song, he's listening to the instruments. He's listening to the different lines that are being played. The vocals are, he doesn't care, frankly.
Yeah.
Jason will pick up on, I mean, lyrics in rap songs. And I'm like, how do you hear words?
I'm in the streets. I know. I know what's going on. Well, it's funny because I'll like just the worst like dog food sounding, you know, band, just like screaming metal or whatever. But it has to have a certain tone. So it's sort of like what you guys are saying. It's sort of like it at, in that moment, if you can't understand the words, you know, like some bands are just, they make up, you know, bands and they just grumble and they literally will write in the lyrics, I don't know, I just made up sounds. That has to be right. That has to sound right overall. It has to have the right tone, the right inflection, the right emphasis or whatever, even if it's just nonsense. So sometimes it's like, oh, the band sounds tight. This sounds great. But like the singer's voice is awful and I can't listen to it. So it's sort of like in between, but I will try to like pick out what the person's saying too. Cause for me, it's like, well, music is just, it's good, but it's like, okay, you know, there's the chords or something. I don't know. I guess I don't understand music. So the only thing I understand barely is how to listen to people.
Right. That's how you form your connection to it.
Yeah.
I wonder what mine is. Cause I don't know music and I don't listen to people. So mine is just
cleaning your brain.
Like just sound. I just hear sound. Sound mush.
Do you want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Punch it.
It's a long way to go for a joke, but I did it. Go ahead, Jeremy,
you reached
please.
Far for that one.
I really did. Literally.
Literally and figuratively. Finally, Dennis Pavao makes up another five tracks from the music loop. Pavao is another 1970s Hawaiian musician who is credited for sparking the Hawaiian music renaissance, especially Hawaiian falsetto singing. He, along with his cousin, started the Hawaiian falsetto group Hui Ohana. Pavao sadly died at the young age of 50 from a brain aneurysm.
Oh,
but let's take a listen
come
to
on.
His...
It's like my top 10 list of things that are going to happen to me. Thanks, Jeremy.
It didn't
happen. Yeah, but
you
know what?
You,
I think it happens though. Fast.
I feel like that's even worse for him.
Like you're just 1 minute you're there, 1 minute you're gone. It's great.
Is it great? Or is it like Ant-Man, like watching Ant-Man where like in your mind it takes 4 years, but in a real time it only takes a certain, you know, it takes like 2 hours.
I don't know. I've never seen Ant-Man. No. But let's take a listen to his contribution to the Polynesian atmosphere, number 10.
Did you guys know
that
there's more languages than English?
That.
Did you guys know that? It's just in.
That was really good music. What do they say? Only the good die young.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, sure. Petrus, you got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Early on at the... Early on at the Polynesian, elaborate outdoor luaus were held on an outdoor stage on the beach. But in that first year of operation, Florida's often unpredictable weather caused a number of cancellations, leading to Disney constructing the sheltered Luau Cove. In 1971, Kaui, I think that's how you say her name, Kaui Brandt, more commonly known as Auntie Kaui, moved from Hawaii to California to perform in the Polynesian show at Disneyland for an 8-month stint. After that, she and her husband Pono moved to Florida to open the new Polynesian Review at the brand new Polynesian Village Resort. Auntie Kaui and Pono had heard the Walt Disney World was looking for a company to produce a Polynesian-themed show for their new hotel, and Auntie Kaui was excited at the prospect. She wanted to create a show that was both exciting and authentic. They formed a company of 28 dancers and musicians to perform the new show. These performers would arrive dramatically each night for the show on a raft from one of the islands in the Seven Seas Lagoon that would just pull up onto the beach and they'd put on a luau.
That's crazy.
The show was described as a love letter to the artistry and story of Polynesia, performed in authentic handmade costumes by dancers who understood and respected the history and the stories they were conveying. The Polynesian Review featured authentic performers accompanied by an all-you-can-eat Polynesian buffet that cost guests just $10
wow.
to eat.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Come to the show. $10.
That's crazy.
After many years, the Polynesian Review was closed in 2003 to make way for the Spirit of Aloha dinner show. Along with many changes, the first half of the show was made more kid-friendly, working in music from the popular Disney movie Lilo and Stitch.
Why? Why do we need to make everything kid-friendly? Can't the adults have something to themselves?
Can we have nothing? Also, why can't kids enjoy a luau?
I know, exactly. It's kid-friendly, right. Meaning IP. That's all.
And exactly. Honestly, why Lilo and Stitch? Yeah.
Thanks, Bob Iger. Let's not forget, this is Bob Iger territory?
No, well, this is Eisner was still the CEO at this time.
2003?
Yeah, get off your high horse.
I thought Iger was like CEO for like 15 years. Doesn't that math add up?
Yeah, 2005.
He 2005, okay. All right. Thanks, Eisner.
Well, but Iger was at the company, and I think he was in charge of parks and resorts at the time.
Thanks, so. Bob Iger.
You just want to hate Bob Iger for some reason.
I don't really care.
It's really hard to watch. The show was like all like hokey and weird and like kids in street clothes and they're all like, it's like anything that they do now, you know, just really unbelievable and saccharine. But for the second act of the show, it looked back to its more authentic roots. Off came the clothes, out came the fire sticks, and the second half of the show much more closely resembled an authentic Polynesian luau. Let's take a listen to some of that number 11.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for, our traditional Polynesian dances! We begin with the hotel from the beautiful island of Tahiti, Yarana! Here to tell you the story of Pele, the volcano goddess, on the coming with the hula kahiko, Kua Loloa.
Yeah, so if you think that sounded good, you ought to see the visuals. Auntie Kaui, who originated the evening Polynesian entertainment, remained at the Polynesian resort for many years following. She could often be found in the lobby making and handing out leis for guests or teaching youngsters the art of the hula. Her full name, Kai Heilani, which means thundering voice of heaven, was given to her as when she was born in Hawaii in 1932, it was during a thunderstorm. She famously turned down Disney's offer to create Polynesian entertainment at Disneyland 3 times, fearing that if she ever left Hawaii, she would never return. She was right. After she did, she would never live there again. She did return, but she never lived in Hawaii again, though she did visit. In fact, in 2007, Kaui returned to Hawaii to receive the prestigious Duke's Kokahiko Award, presented by Duke's Waikiki Restaurant to an individual who exemplifies the finest traditions of Hawaii. She said in an interview around the time, quote, "Guests ask us if we miss our islands, if we ever get homesick for our flowers, our waterfalls, mountains, and rolling waves. I tell them that we bring the islands with us in our songs, in our dances, and especially in our spirit of aloha, the gift of the islands to all who enjoy life." Kaui passed away in 2020 at the age of 88.
Jeez.
However, sadly, Jason, as I am writing the SpectroTime segment, we learned about the sad epilogue of the Polynesian Review and its successor, the Spirit of Aloha Dinner Show. Just last week, Disney announced in order to make way for a new Disney Vacation Club Tower, our beloved Luau Cove, which has hosted authentic Polynesian entertainment since 1973, will be demolished. And with it, the Spirit of Aloha Dinner Show, which hasn't been in operation since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, is officially closing for good.
Wow.
Bob Chapek and his cabal of unimaginative, sterile, vacuous, inept, banal, uninspired frauds who masquerade as Imagineers, Zach Ridley, I'm looking right at you, are going to demolish Auntie Cowie's legacy and build an ugly, uninspired, generic vacation club tower. A sad punctuation on a long legacy in history.
Wow.
So that's most of the music of the Polynesian resort. But it would be remiss to talk about the music of the Polynesian and the history of the Polynesian without talking about another historic event that took place at the Polynesian.
Ooh, what is it?
So I'm going to read you. So first of all, I'm going to make a book recommendation.
Okay.
And that is to read by Jim Corcus, Hidden Treasures of Walt Disney World Hotel Resorts, or Resort Hotels, sorry, Histories, Mysteries, and Theming. So I'm going to read you an excerpt from one of the chapters. In the February 9th, 2008, Orlando Sentinel newspaper, May Pang, who was one of John Lennon's personal assistants, was recorded. At the end of 1974, after 3 years of court battles and acrimony, the final dissolution of the Beatles was about to happen. The meeting was scheduled for December 19th at New York's Plaza Hotel. Ironically, that was the first place the group stayed in America in 1964. George Harrison was in New York on his Dark Horse tour. Paul and Linda McCartney came in, and of course, John and I were already in the city. Only Ringo was missing, but he had signed the documents in England. Julian, John's son, who was 11 years old, was with us for the Christmas holiday, and all was calm, all was bright. Gathered around a huge table were George, his lawyer and business manager, the McCartneys, with Paul, Paul's in-laws and lawyers, Ringo's lawyer and business manager, Neil Aspinall of Apple, with two sets of company lawyers, blah, blah, blah. I was with John, and it was up to me to tell Harold that he decided not to attend the meeting, blah, blah, blah. Let's just keep moving. John, Julian, and I left New York the following day to spend Christmas in Florida. On December 29th, 1974, the voluminous documents were brought down to Florida by one of Apple's lawyers. This is Apple Records, not Apple Computer.
Right, right.
Take out your camera, he joked to me. He looked wistfully out. This is John Lennon speaking. He looked wistfully out the window. I could almost see him replaying the entire Beatles experience in his mind. He finally picked up his pen and, in the unlikely backdrop of the Polynesian Village Hotel at Disney World, ended the greatest rock and roll band in history by simply scrawling John Lennon at the bottom of the page. John Lennon booked a room at the Polynesian Village Resort at Walt Disney World and gazed out the Seven Seas Lagoon before he signed the document that broke up and ended the Beatles. Although Disney is unable to confirm which room Lennon was in, it is apparent that it was a ground floor corner room in the Samoa Longhouse, formerly the Hawaii Building, that looked out on the Seven Seas Lagoon with Cinderella Castle clearly visible in the distance. Both John and Julian Lennon were excellent swimmers and enjoyed the pool at the resort. The end of the Beatles.
What a weird ass way to end.
Well, that's just where I cut out because, like, we get it. They love swimming. Yeah. But that's it. The Beatles ended at the Polynesian. Musical
that's
history.
That's crazy.
That's wild.
And they were good swimmers.
And they were good swimmers.
Perfect.
Oh, God.
Just shut up.
He's still going. Wow.
I thought that that next sentence was germane. I'm like, oh, this is so stupid. A fantastic book, by the way. Get it, read it, love it. Yeah. It's a page turner.
Sounds like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jim Corcus. So that is that's the history, the musical history of the Polynesian Village Resort right there.
It's amazing. Good job. Join us
as we unravel. Very good, Jeremy. Behind some of Disney's most pieces of music. It's both excellent swimmers. Enjoyed the pool of the Polynesian. Great. I'm sure they did. John Lennon, also an excellent number one-ist, enjoyed the bathroom at the Polynesian several times.
You know what that is?
What?
That's a good story.
Jeremy, the detail and experience that you put into your research is second to none.
I love it.
Very good stuff, man.
Oh, God.
The Poly. Yeah, that's we talked about on the last in-depth about all that, the new tower. It looks atrocious. It's atrocious. It looks like a strip mall, three-story. It's awful. Looks terrible.
Here's where it really gets me off the rails, and it was when I was reading about Auntie Cowie, because what you realize is this was her legacy. She put her heart and soul into the Polynesian, and pardon me, built this show.
I thought you
show.
Were crying.
Are you going to cry? Dude?
I was
you big baby, you're going to cry?
I was like, damn.
Built this show with her husband, left her home, which she was afraid to leave, thinking she'd never move back, didn't move back, but built on the spirit that she so that she believed in her culture, and she was like, you know what? What I can do is be here and pass this on to youngsters. And she did it until a ripe old age. This hotel had a heart and a soul and a person who left a legacy. And they're demolishing it. And that's what these – they don't understand. Like, they would rather build a vacation club tower than honor the legacy of this person who – these buildings are more than just hotels that look Hawaiian, okay? There was a heart and a soul and a person who built a legacy there, and they're demolishing it. They waited until she died, and now it's over. And it makes me really angry.
Mm. And it's not like they can't put a vacation club literally anywhere else. Like, they don't have to just demolish it and put it there.
Well, and that's the thing. It doesn't look like it belongs with the Polynesian at all. It looks like it sort of belongs next door to the Grand California, to be honest with you.
You should start one of those things that Jason hates.
The GoFundMe? The change.org petition.
Change.org.
I'm sure there's like 100 of them already.
A group text?
That's what Ben
hates. Those are the things that I hate.
But this is the thing. Why are we demolishing this? Walt said, we have more than enough room to accommodate all the dreams, the blessing of size. And instead of taking advantage of that, they're going to knock down something that has some amount of authenticity, put these performers, these wonderful performers, out of a job, and build another one of their crappy towers. I'm on life support with this company. I don't have much more patience.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, the hotel will make them money. The performances didn't make them as much money as the hotel did. And that's, you know, and that's ultimately what these people are going to care about. I mean, look at everything. I mean, that's what all the CEOs are doing. I mean, look at what everything Iger did, just to make more money. Same thing Chapek's doing. Chapek's not doing anything different than Iger. Same thing.
You can still
Iger's doing the same thing as Iger did.
But
same thing.
It can still be built somewhere else and keep the authenticity, because it's the show doesn't need to make money. It's supposed to be something for the guests to enjoy. So, like,
I agree. But on the other hand, it's, well,
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying.
I know. And I understand, but I'm saying, like, where else are they going to put this thing? Well, we can get rid of this thing that doesn't make us money and put this thing here that makes us money.
I'm sorry. You have a dinner show that's run for 40 years. You're telling me $80 a head, that thing with some cheap buffet, that's not making money. It's making money.
It's making money, but not as much as a hotel.
Not as much as a hotel, but Bev is right. Like, there is so much land around there. Like,
for sure.
They don't have to replace anything.
Look, I'm not saying that they're right. I'm just saying I understand what they're doing. What I don't understand is why is there not room for both? And it's, why is it DVC club members only? Don't they have enough in the other resorts? Like, do they need their own specific tower? Now I hate everybody in the DVC club. Everybody. I don't care.
Well, that's the thing, is it's a false choice. It's like, well, we have to have something that makes money, so it's either this or that. It's like, well, how about you build a DVC tower and not knock down the show we all love?
Right.
Can you do both?
Right. You can. And it even makes it a worse choice. And I know I wasn't really defending the choice, but I'm saying I get it from like a business standpoint. But it sort of makes it makes the people who aren't in the DVC now dislike people in the DVC, because, like, oh, you guys are the reason why we're losing this thing. We're not in the DVC club because we can't afford it, or we choose not to, or it's a scam or whatever. But now that's invading the thing that we do like, that we go to frequently, that doesn't need a membership, that doesn't need points, doesn't need to do anything. So now we have no choice.
Devalues the hotel a little bit, because now there was this cool, like, there's this cool hotel and there was this cool thing that you could do at this cool hotel. So, okay, yeah, let's pay a little more and stay there. But now this cool thing that you could do there isn't there anymore. But you're still paying through the nose.
Yeah. I mean, you're paying the performers. You're, you know, getting all the, there's cost involved, like with any show.
Sure.
And maybe, you know, look, maybe the last 5 years they were planning to get rid of it. Who knows? Maybe this is an Iger. I'm going to pin this on Iger. It sounds like an Iger move.
No.
No, Chapek's been involved long enough that he's endured the brunt of enough of his choices to where if they were somebody else's, he'd be like, not me.
Chapek is doing some bad things. Let's just be honest. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Name 12.
I don't know. Jason is this big. He's a Chapologist.
No, he's not. I really don't even think he is.
Look,
he's
us just, bald guys got to stick together. Right. Oh, jeez. That's what happens. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I really, really, really do appreciate it. If you're looking for more content, Bantha Milk has just released an episode. They went through the Peacemaker show, which is a DC comic show on HBO. Oh. And they decided to do something a little bit different, so you can check that out. Supreme Resort, I'm sure, has a show out. I don't know. Eric, I know you guys did some stuff, but no one tells me anything, so I don't know anything what's going on my own shows. But coming up right after this, The Secret Show with Jeremy is, I think, sufficiently bullied enough that he's going to stay on. He said he wasn't going to, but he better.
I got a spin class in the morning.
Look, this show will send you into spinning, okay? It's fine. Just stay on. It'll be fine. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I appreciate the support. And until next time, we'll see you later.